Welcome to Design Downtime, the podcast where we celebrate the joys of living a balanced creative life. I'm your host, Guy Siegel, a design director in Toronto, Canada, and I invite you to join me on this journey as we redefine what it means to be a successful design professional. Let's break free from the shackles of hustle culture and embrace the full spectrum of human experience, because life is too precious to be spent only in pursuit of productivity. Today, I'm super happy to chat with Taylor Kashdan. Taylor is a North Carolina-based multidisciplinary creative and community builder that's passionate about people, design, and all the intersections in between. He has a burning desire to collaborate with others to create exceptional work for people who give a shit. With nearly a decade's worth of experience, Taylor currently spends his workdays leading the next evolution of the Mayo Clinic's Design System Program. Previous roles include a variety of in-house positions within the management consulting realm, ad tech, and HBO, all focusing on brand and marketing maturation, as well as leading fintech UX projects, contributing to and consulting for established design systems, and leading design standardization and operations efforts. Taylor, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Guy. I'm stoked to be here.
Awesome. Great to have you. And today you want to talk to us about Sandlot Baseball.
Yes.
Which is wonderful because I know nothing about it.
I think it's one of those misnomer things that I think people actually may know more than they think. So I wonder if in today's discussion, you'll be like, ah, I remember what that is. We'll see where it goes.
I have no doubt that by the end of this conversation, I'll be an expert.
There you go.
What is Sandlot Baseball?
Yeah. So I think the easiest way to think about it is there was a movie in the 90s, 1993 particularly, called The Sandlot. And the movie followed a group of kids who basically played in a sand field, played baseball. And without ruining the plot of the movie, the baseball kind of goes over a fence into a yard where this dog lives that's called the Beast. And there's rumors about the dog having like eaten other children and eaten, you know, baseballs and made it like preventing, you know, teams from or people from getting, you know, their gear back and all that kind of stuff. And it's a funny, like, you know, kind of coming of age, like little, like, you know, kids, you know, getting up to figure out how to problem solve stuff kind of movie. The essence of it is the idea of Sandlot Baseball is meant to be something that's approachable for anybody of any skill level, any age, any gender, any skill set, anything to be able to just come together and do like the community over competition kind of side of sports without it being this like, you need to be a very athletic person. You need to, you know, care about points, understand rules in the game. So it takes, you know, the pressure off. It makes things more about like being with people as opposed to performing properly at a sport. And it's something that's kind of organically grown in different states, different communities, based on just the need and want for something that's like collaborative and getting outside and having fun with other people without it being cutthroat and needing to be, kind of, you mentioned in the intro, like something about like hustle culture and it being like constantly on without all the pressures of performance or success or winning for that matter.
So what brings you to Sandlot Baseball? What was your, I always start with the origin story of people.
Yeah. So what's funny about that is so when I was a kid, I played a lot. I grew up in New York up until about the age of like 12-ish. And there, obviously, baseball's huge, right? So like as a kid, I played soccer, I played baseball, I played all these things. Baseball was the one that stuck. It was the one I actually enjoyed. And when we moved into North Carolina, right before like I started middle school, you know, I moved here like enjoying baseball, the sport. When I got here, everything was college sports and it was football and basketball were the two big things. So there was no home for baseball. So I kind of lost interest in it because there wasn't a community in that sense in the same way that there was, you know, where I, you know, had been born. But as I, you know, obviously got older and wanted to get more into doing something physical, you know, to exercise, to be outside, you know, whatever, especially during the early days of the pandemic, you know, just needing to find ways to connect with other people outside and be able to do some sort of activity. I had heard about a Sandlot Baseball group. And I didn't understand what Sandlot was at the time either, but I was nervous about joining like a men's league or a rec league or anything because I didn't want the cutthroat competition. And I knew like my 30s, like I don't have the energy that I had when I was a kid. Like I can't like, you know, do all the things that some of these like, you know, younger, you know, right out of college or in college folks could do. But I wanted some level of like understanding of the sport without, you know, having to feel like we're just, you know, out there, you know, using a baseball tee or bunting around, something that was inclusive. So I found a group locally. They call themselves the Carolina Sandlot Collective, and they do this thing. They built a community around people who are new to baseball, who just want to play the sport, who don't want to be part of these leagues, et cetera, to join in. And I kind of found them because there was a specific team, the Raleigh Reapers, that had these really dope jerseys. They were like black and white pinstripe and had like skulls and crossbones and things all involved in their marketing and like scythes and stuff. And I was like, that's dope. That looks great. I just kind of want to know what this is. So it's funny because at that period in my life, like all of my communities and friendships and social circles were so focused on professional development or like joining other designers and talking about stuff and creativity and whatever, that my brain was just like having trouble separating work from play because it was all a flavor of work. You know, even if you're doing something outside of the office or not with your coworkers, but you're talking about design, like our brains don't make that switch. It's just all design all the time. So I sought out baseball. I was like, okay, let me try a different thing. Like I want to try something else that's got a little bit of organization that I can still, you know, enjoy the construct of and do this. And the irony of that is, so I joined that team, I joined that group to play, and my goal was like no designers, right? And so, but the funny part is like I was drawn to this particular group and this particular team because of their aesthetic, not realizing or knowing at the time that they started up the same way that what I was looking for, designers looking for non-designers to hang out with, and they all just kind of found each other and were like, well, I guess we can hang out, we just won't talk work, you know? So they like built all these cool graphic kits and like jerseys and stuff, so everything looks really great because it's a bunch of designers working on it, you know? So it's just kind of funny, but it's grown exponentially in the last couple of years, at least here in North Carolina. We have, I think, 6 or 7 teams now across the state, across the city area. But it's not one of those things that like you have to be on a team to play, where we pride ourselves at having, you know, open play Saturdays and Sundays in some cases, depending on the day, where anyone can show up, you know, having any knowledge of the game or no knowledge of the game, with or without a glove, you know, with or without cleats, whatever, to just come and enjoy camaraderie and the game of baseball. And then on occasion, usually once a month or twice a month, we have formal games where people wear their jerseys and we have, you know, a coordinated effort as a roster just to have that baseball flair that's still part of it for like some sense of camaraderie and competition. But it's been this really nice thing to like, you know, get to know a new group of people and then folks I maybe wouldn't have normally connected with or would have not connected in this way with, you know, while still being able to get some exercise, play a sport that is relatively low impact and then doesn't, you know, require so much physical attention in the sense of like football, right? Where I'm getting tackled, you know, but it's a little more rigorous than, you know, maybe something else or mixes out more than just like running or riding a bike where you're actually with people. So it's been fun.
So how do you play Sandlot baseball? How is it different from regular baseball?
Yeah. It depends on the day, to be honest. You know, there are some days where there's enough people where we divide up into two teams and we basically play a game of baseball. We don't care about so many of the rules, right? In the sense of like, you know, if there's someone up there who, you know, gets a third strike and but they haven't got a hit all day, we're like, stay in there, like go until you get a hit. You know, we're not like super cutthroat on that. Or if there's like, you know, only a few hours that we have, maybe we do 4 outs instead of 3 or something just to make sure we can get more play time in, you know? Or if it's a contentious call over like someone, you know, getting safe on first base, instead of arguing, we just do rock, paper, scissors and whoever wins is the answer. You know, it's very open in that way. Like it's not as cutthroat hard. So on those days where we have enough people, we do something like that, a scrimmage, right? Where it's just like, all right, everybody split, you know, one team here, one team here. And that's not, you know, there's no jerseys, no formalization. And I think it's just kind of like, all right, you. All right. And other days there's just, you know, either not enough of folks or there's too many people. And we just, you know, do drills or we do batting practice. And it's just, you know, pop flies in the infield and then hang it on the outfield and people are drinking beer out on the field and just bullshitting and hanging out. And there's, you know, baseball happening around and people are, you know, cycling out as they're getting their batting practice in. And then some days we have that are a little more like, all right, you know, we want to work on our infield, you know, play. So we're going to do drills for infield, you know, for the duration of today. So each day is different, especially in those open play days where it's open to the community and anyone can come because we don't know if it's going to be 5 people or 500 people, you know. But the only thing that's ever like predictable and kind of standard is on our actual game days where we have 2 local teams that are, you know, playing each other. We have usually someone volunteer to be an umpire just to kind of help keep things moving. And those games are played like typical baseball. You know, there's you know, sliding and outs and rules and all these other things. The only thing that we don't do is we keep track of score in the sense of like wanting to know how the game is progressing, but we don't keep like records and there's not like a tournament bracket or any of that stuff. It's really meant for the joy of the game and the joy of camaraderie and being with people, even if we are in our fancy jerseys, you know, playing quote unquote real baseball.
So during the regular play where people just show up and play, do you find there are different sort of levels of expectations for people coming in? Or is this sport sort of self-selecting enough that you only get the people who are there to have fun?
That's a really good question. it's definitely the former. And I can say from my own experience, like when I first joined this group, like the days I happened to go happened to be days where like very athletic people were out there. And I was like, I don't know if I keep up with this. You know, I didn't want something that was like super intense or really like everybody knows the rules of baseball. We don't talk about it, you know, kind of thing, or that it's very serious and people are hard on themselves. That is just a double-edged sword of having an open group, right? We've got folks that are, you know, used that were, you know, went to the first round draft pick, you know, for certain teams. And this isn't an exaggeration. This is real, right? And then we have folks that like showed up the first day they've ever even put on a baseball glove and it's the same day, right? So it's a mixed bag of how do we make sure that that person that, you know, it was almost a, you know, a professional or was drafted and then their career changed, you know, and they are here 10 years later, and the person who's never played both have a good time. And that's why we try to focus on the camaraderie side of it. But what's really nice too is like everyone knows that's the point, right? The point is there to be there to enjoy each other's company. So we've got some folks, you know, like I said, that are very, very good, and they know how to dial it up and dial it down. You know, it's like if there are other people, for example, at the plate and the pitcher is the one that's, you know, been doing this for decades, you know, we have signals and stuff where we can go, okay, yeah, give me the heat, you know, or this is my first time, go easy on me. And those folks, thankfully, are willing to kind of, you know, stagger one way or the other. And there are some days where we get a little intense or it's a little, you know, too professional, so to speak, or too lackadaisical, but it comes and goes. But from my own experience, like, again, I first day I showed up, I was like, oh God, I can't handle this. Like, there's no way. And that is a intimidation that we're trying to actively combat. And frankly, it's one of the reasons why we get a primarily male audience. We've had some female and non-binary folks show up and go, this is really intense. This feels like a men's league. And we're like, shit, it's just happened to be that like that today. And we don't mean it that way. And we don't want it that way. You know, and I think oftentimes because as you build community with people, right, you tend to get close with them. And then you forget to, you know, re-mention that like we're here for fun, you know, to the new person that shows up, or make sure that you re-go over the rules and level set for everybody for when the new person shows up, because everyone's in the rhythm of being together. So it's a never, you know, never ending effort to make sure that we're maintaining that true aura of inclusivity that we want, so that everyone can have fun. I mean, that's the point of this at the end of the day. It's not meant to like keep records and, you know, make sure I get my home runs and all that bullshit. It's meant to be like, hey, come spend a couple hours on a Saturday doinking around with some people who happen to play a similar sport or have a desire to play a sport as you do, and or at least just to get some exercise. And if you miss a ball, who cares? Let's laugh about it, you know, have a beverage and move on.
So you mentioned earlier that before you moved to North Carolina, you know, growing up, you were doing different sports. Are there sort of equivalents in other sports of the mentality or the approach of sandlot baseball that you've seen?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think a lot of other sports, like for example, basketball and volleyball, like they have a pickup culture, right? Where like you can either play the formal thing or there's just pickup games. So you come and you hang out and do it and play. Now, I don't know if they necessarily have the same like learning and openness vibe that say sandlot does. But I think that's also subject to the way the sport is played. Like something like basketball is fast paced. Like every person has a role. There's always, you know, active movement on everybody. Where baseball, you know, if nobody's hitting out to the outfielders are kind of just waiting. You know, sort of thing. So there's certain positions that may or may not be more intense or get more attention or require more effort. Like pitching and catching, for example, are a little more specialized. I mean, anyone could do it theoretically, but if you want it to be done in a way that keeps the pace of the game, right, or at least people don't get hurt, right, you kind of need someone who's done the catcher thing before and someone who's done the pitching thing before. Where I don't know, you know, these other sports as intimately, but having played pickup basketball and, you know, pickup volleyball before just with friends, like those sports seem to be a little more you know, anyone can join in the same way soccer. I think folks do that as well. I'm not big on soccer, so I don't know, but I imagine, you know, there are equivalents, but I don't know just in my experience that there's anything specific like, oh, this is like a sandlot version of, you know, basketball that's very specific to this kind of thing. I'm just unfamiliar.
How do you prepare for game day?
A lot of stretching multiple days before. I can thank having thrown out my arm and having to go do PT and stuff for that, for the reason. But most practice days and game days, I tend to like start stretching a few days before. At least I try to. It's mainly my arm because I tend to. So I play catcher. So the it's a long throw home to second base. So I need to be prepared and make sure that I'm not going to like break my shoulder when I try to make that throw. So I do stretching beforehand. I now have a little bit of like a Pedialyte regimen to make sure I don't, you know, pass out because the just dehydration's a real thing, especially here in the North Carolina heat. So mainly those two things. And then I've started to, it's like I was always so against the idea of like supplements and protein powders, because it always felt so douchey and very like gym rat-ish. But I now also take recovery protein after games, because there's an intense period of exercise where you're running around for a few hours. And as I've gotten older, I'm like, my body can't just heal from this as quickly or handle this as quickly. Like if I don't do my stretching and take my Pedialyte and take my, you know, recovery protein for the next week, you know, I'm dead or stiff, or I can't play the next week, you know, because these are every Saturday is when we do these things. So it's taken a lot of like maintenance for my body to make sure that I do that. But I think mentally the other piece too is like, especially game days, like I have to go and remember and remind myself, like, this is supposed to be fun. Like, so if you don't win, or if we don't do well, or I strike out at the plate, like, yeah, is it disappointing? Sure. But this is not something we're keeping track of score. We're not here to compete. I mean, it's always fun to have a good level of play in competition, but at the end of the day, like, I'm here to hang out with these folks and bond with these people, and it just happens to be over a game. So it's a lot of mentality resetting in that, to make sure I'm like going into this with the right energy, and I bring that to the field and to the people that I'm playing with, and then a lot of stretching for this aging body.
Was that something that was easy for you to get into, the mindset of this is for fun, I don't have to win?
No. And that's for two reasons. I think the first of which is because, like, when I was a kid, it was very cutthroat, even like as a child. Like, the baseball culture in New York, at least when I was growing up, was like in middle school to elementary and middle, and like that whole like grade school age, like, if you want to do baseball seriously, you're training in those years to then make it to the right college, to make it to the right thing. So like, it was very intense. There wasn't, at least from what I remember, as much just play, enjoy it, you know, whatever. More like, we're doing this for real. So I had to like shed a lot of that when I got here. And then the intensity of college sports here, I thought what it was going to bleed over into Sandlot, because it's, people are very intense and very opinionated about all that. So it took me a minute to kind of get out of that flow, you know. And then again, the hard thing is like when you're walking up to, you know, a game day and everyone's in their nice coordinated jerseys and everyone's matching, you're like, oh, this is serious. And you have to remember, it's like, well, it looks serious, but it's not. It's fun. It's meant to be. And it's a constant reminder, I think, especially for me, having now, I just started up a new team, the Neuse River Nine. I'm wearing that purple hat that is for our team. So now I'm in a captain role, and we have them very loosely. It's not like, you know, the leaders in the sense of like they make decisions, but it's more just like who coordinates games. So my energy and my like, you know, setting the stage of, and my co-captain setting the stage on how we're going to play that day makes a difference, right? When we show up in the dugout and we're like, all right, you know, this is supposed to be fun. Like, don't worry if you drop a ball or make an error. Like, we don't care, you know, but it's difficult when you walk into those games because you don't know how the other team is thinking. So they may be like, no, we're here cutthroat. We want to play real baseball. And our team's like, let's go drink beer in the outfield. Like, you never know what you're getting yourself into. We can just hope that they're aligned, you know, when the first pitch goes down.
You mentioned getting to the field, seeing the other teams. What are some of the rituals that happen on game day?
Yeah, we've been trying to do team-wide or game-wide stretching. That's the first thing. Because we've had some injuries, folks, you know, pulling a hamstring or getting hit by a ball or running into each other because they couldn't, you know, someone couldn't stop or move out of the way. So we're trying to remind ourselves by way of doing group things of like, hey, we didn't keep attention on this, so nobody gets hurt. So that's kind of one ritual. The second, a lot of teams have bring like speakers and grills and stuff to make it more about the hangout, you know? And so some teams have even done like walk-up music for some of their players, you know, to make it funny as you're like walking up to the plate to bat. There's a lot of like chirping and teasing, you know, from the dugouts, you know, people like drop a ball or a pitcher that is, you know, pitching fast or slow. So we try to do some of that quippy sportsy stuff because it's fun. It's part of the, you know, the camaraderie. But ritual wise, that's mainly it. Like we do like a heads together kind of like, all right, let's go over the rules for the day before we play, you know, for game day. So we're all, you know, on the same level of understanding for how intense we're going to play that day, because some teams want to, you know, play baseball. And sometimes you're up for that, you know, sometimes you're not. The other thing we do a lot is there's so many of us in this collective, this big group that either is on a team or not on a team or just hangs out, that, you know, there's times where my team, for example, can't fill a full roster to play on game day. So we'll invite other people to come with us. You know, hey, do you want to, you know, moonlight for the nine today? You know, or do you want to, you know, play as a guest spot, you know, whatever, so that we can bring more people into the fold, because there's only nine, you know, positions on the field. So you can only have so many people at a time, you know, per team and per game. So we want to invite people in to be like, hey, you've been showing up a lot and you're part of this, you know, community. Do you want to play on the team today? Or do you want to join the team in the grand scheme? So we try to have that like options for people. Like, you can come and be casual and never be part of a team if you don't want to. Or you can aim to be on a team and that's the goal. Or you can start up on your own team or whatever. Or you can just never decide, jump between all of it and enjoy it as well. So I think our rituals are more around making sure the environment feels that open than it is anything else.
How many years have you been doing it?
Personally, I think the first time I joined was in 2019, and then obviously 2020 put everything on pause. And 2021, we started to get back out again because it was, you know, beginning to get safer to do so. So I'd say about 3.5 years on and off, give or take, 4 years total. So, yeah, and we play from Valentine's Day to Thanksgiving because that's when the fields are unlocked. So that's the time frame. And it's usually every Saturday or Sunday is an open play, and then once or twice a month is a game.
Gotcha. In the years that you've been involved in this, how have you evolved?
Yeah, it's been fun and rewarding in the sense of like, I joined this, like I said, to like meet non-design people and to not take like a leadership role and stuff and then be able to just enjoy something for the sake of enjoyment. And naturally, now I'm heading up a team and I'm designing graphics for that. Like, and it just comes as part of it, you know? So like, but I've learned, it's helped me set boundaries better. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. Like, this is supposed to be a fun thing. So I'm not going to set all these crazy deadlines for myself and when we get this done. We don't have to do all these things because, again, it's for fun. It's a volunteer thing. Like, it doesn't need to be, you know, nobody's looking over my shoulder going, you guys didn't do this or whatever. So it's changed for me in that regard. But I think it's also opened opportunities. Like, for example, now annually we have this big event. It's coming up at the end of this month in April that we call the Sandlot Revival. And it's led by one of the team captain of the Raleigh Reapers here. And his vision for this event was basically to have a Sandlot style tournament, for lack of a better word, beyond just the reach of what our local collective can do. So every year, this is the third year that they'll be doing it, we invite Sandlot teams from across the U.S. to come travel to Raleigh, and we rent this so the Durham Bulls is one of the minor league teams here, and they have the big stadium that they play in now, and then they have an old stadium they used to play in that they rent out. So we rent that field for the weekend, and we get to play under the lights and in the stadium, and like there's people and announcers and the whole thing, and it's this really unique, surreal experience where like you get to kind of pretend to be a professional for a little while, you know. But what's cool about it is because we invite people outside of our, so you know, our six teams then invite six teams from the U.S. to come play, and you get people all across the spectrum, some that are like very intent on, you know, playing real baseball, some that are here to just hang around and mess around, and some that have an in between. Like there's a group in New Orleans called the People's Baseball League, and they came last year and they'll be coming this year as well. They hired a jazz band to lead them in. So like out of nowhere, just these like trumpets and people just started like coming down the field. We were like, what the hell's happening? And like it followed them in, you know. It was this like awesome experience. And half of those folks played in costumes and tutus, and it was like this big like fun like Mardi Gras style event on the field. So it's been a really good reminder for me that, you know, even if something as organized, quote unquote, as sports, like it can and should be fun, and it can bring you joy, and it can be an outlet, you know, to for whether it's distraction from, you know, shit that you've got going on in your life, right? Or just another way to connect with other people over something that isn't just work, you know, and it's great. It's great.
So how successful have you been in meeting with a group of people who are not designers?
It's been fun. So far on my team, so on the nine, there's only two of us that are designers, and the other 12 are people who do other stuff, which is great. So that's been a fun exploration. The Reapers and a few of the another team called the Carolina Kudzu are very design heavy and design centered. They're two of the cornerstone groups that have been around the longest, but it's been cool to watch them evolve because we've, now that this is beyond our little, you know, circles, more folks are interested. More folks are seeing what we're doing, whether it's because of the aesthetic of the stuff or because they just enjoy baseball. So more and more are growing. And this year we've kind of grown exponentially. We had our first Sandlot opener, we called it, which is like the opening of the season, but for like regular baseball, we just timed up our day. And we had roughly 65 people, give or take, show up on one Saturday, which to be like clear, normally we have like 20 people, but 40 of that 60 were brand new people that just heard about us, you know, on Instagram or from a friend of a friend. So it's an entirely new group, you know, and we'll see how many of those folks stick around and want to keep coming out. But I think the more it grows and the longer it's around, the more folks that are beyond, you know, design circles looking for something new to do are beginning to come out and get involved and keep coming back, which has been a really cool thing to kind of watch organically happen.
That's awesome. Is there anything that you would love to get to take from the world of Sandlot baseball, the ethos, the approach, the mindset, and bring it into your professional life?
Yeah, I think there's a another design systems practitioner. Her name's Lauren Lepret, and she gave a presentation at a Figma's Schema event in New York a few years ago. And one of her slides said something along the lines of, "Don't forget, this is just rectangles on the internet." You know, and I think about that often, and I think that's what Sandlot kind of does for me too. It takes me out of the fact that, like, yes, do the things we create, whether no matter which flavor of design you work in, help change culture and inform people and make their lives easier or harder or whatever, depending on what you're working on. Yes, and it's an important work to be thinking through these problems from a business perspective and a design perspective and whatever. But it also has to be fun. Otherwise, why are you doing it? Right. Like, and I'm not a person that is like, you need to drink company Kool-Aid and you know, be, you know, design is everything, but like, you have to find some joy at some level of what you're doing, you know, whether it's through the camaraderie with your coworkers and your team or in the actual things you're making. So it's been a nice reminder to me that, like, number one, there's more to life than just work. Right. And sometimes even there's more to the people you're surrounding yourself with than the work you're doing. Right. So again, this is a lot of these folks I know and sound that are designers, but we don't talk design, right? We talk baseball, we talk life or whatever. And it's nice to reconnect with folks that, yeah, I may have known in design circles and now know in a different capacity, and you learn a different side of them. So I think what it has helped me do too is to challenge my perspective on some of that. Like, just because I interact with designers and engineers and product managers all day doesn't mean that's who they are. Some people, that's their identity and that's okay. That's their choice, or that's, you know, what they want to do, and that's fine. But to know that, like, there are other hobbies, right, that everyone has, and we could use that as ways to bond and grow together as a society, as coworkers, as whatever, as a community, is just a thing I think it takes intentional effort to do. And I don't think as a collective, you know, society, we do enough, because I think that there's a lot to it that helps refuel our own, you know, energy levels and mentality and whatever, when you can bond over things that don't impact your ability to pay your bills, you know, and to make ends meet and make performance in your job and whatever.
Taylor, where can people find you?
I am at Taylor Kashdan on all social platforms across the board. I love digging into design system stuff and talking design, but also, like, Sandlot baseball and things like that. Like, this is fun. This is fun for me. You'll notice if you ever decide to look at my Instagram, like, it used to be all design stuff and, like, letter forms and doodling. And then I was like, this is for me. So I changed it. I started doing a little more, like, showing baseball stuff or showing family stuff. My LinkedIn is obviously all professional stuff, but that's where that is. But those are the two main spots. And I'm on Twitter or X, whatever the hell you want to call it, like, casually ranting and retweeting things that are there.
Awesome. Thank you so much for joining me today. And now I'm an expert on Sandlot baseball. Thanks to you.
There you go. And I encourage anyone who's interested, whether you're interested in actually baseball or just the community side of it, like, look in your city. There's probably a group that is getting together on a weekend or something and just throwing around a ball, you know, and trying to bond with each other. The Sandlot Revolution, as they call it, has been growing and growing. And the more folks that get involved, the more we can be more inclusive and more cater to the community side of it as opposed to the sports side of it. So I definitely encourage anyone even vaguely interested to just show up once, see how it goes.
Awesome. It's been wonderful. Thank you so much, Taylor.
For sure. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
This is all for this episode of Design Downtime. Thank you for joining me. And until next time, I hope you enjoy your downtime.